Hey guys, this is Laura Vandervoort. I played Kara Kent / Supergirl on Smallville, and you are listening to Always Hold On to Smallville.
Welcome to Always Hold On to Smallville. In this podcast, we talk about each and every episode of The Young Superman Show. They ran from 2001 to 2011 on the WB and the CW. I'm your host, Zach Moore, and I'm joined by two very special guests to talk about a very special episode that could have been Smallville's seventh season finale. We have from Krypton site, Craig Byrne. What's up, Craig?
Hey, thanks for having me on again.
And from Lois and Clark, the new podcast of Superman, Matt Truex. What's up, Matt?
It's Retcon Day, everybody. I'm so excited.
Retcon Day, Retcon Season, Season 7. The retcons have really come to a head here. You know how the Season 5 finale of Arrow was a perfect circle to the first episode of the show? Well, the would-be Season 7 finale of Smallville was a perfect circle to the beginning of the show.
Because kinda.
We have the last scene, and they both involve Oliver Queen so, in its own way. But this is exciting because Veritas is very interesting. Craig, you have some insider knowledge on this, but the writer's strike was going on, the 2007-2008 writer's strike, and basically it was going on because we have a brave new world of home video and syndication and streaming rights and all these things. People who work on television shows, they get royalties from rebroadcasts and things like that. So when you have streaming and home video, it changes the game. They really hadn't adjusted the laws and contracts before that. And that's what that whole writer's strike, that particular one was about. There have been a lot of writer's strikes over the history of Hollywood, but that's what that particular one was about. You can read more about it in Smallville. The Official Companion, Season 7, available wherever books are sold. Written by you, sir, Craig Byrne.
But does everybody have a Seinfeld book?
I was just going to call it out, too. Oh, my God. For everyone at home, Zach holds up his companion, and both Craig and I just saw the... Is that the Seinfeld S and E hanging out of it? And you have a sticker that is your bookmark?
I got this, I believe, at Comic Palooza in Houston, like 2012 or something. And I won it on... If Lance is listening, I know he is. Thanks, Lance. He was there. When I got this, I think I won it on some like spin the wheel at a Comic-Con thing. And I got the Seinfeld. And it's a sticker. But I'm like, I don't want to... If you have a sticker, it's like a permanent decision.
Okay.
You know, where it's going to be. So instead, I use it as a bookmark, and it's fine.
I have so many stickers that are just like, you know... things that I look at because of that. Because you're like, hey, I was going to ask you, like, what possessed you to buy a sticker for Seinfeld?
I want it. It was free.
Like, drivers behind me or other people at the cafe must know that I am
a Seinfeld
fan.
You put it on your laptop, right? Or your suitcase, or if you're a musician, your guitar case. But Craig, you'll be happy to know I have used this bookmark and all of your Smallville companions that has been my companion through the Smallville companions. And I don't actually, this is a great segue. I don't know what I'm going to do with it after this, because unfortunately, Season 7 is the last Smallville companion. Titan Press, what are you doing? Titan Books, get on it. Give Craig Byrne a call. Let's get Seasons 8, 9, and 10. That's what I say.
Volume 2 of the Visual Guide, too.
Yeah, Visual Guide. We got Seasons 1 through 5. It's over here on my shelf.
Well, we do have Season 6 in the Best Buy edition of the Visual Guide.
Oh, is there an alternate version exclusive? Of the Visual Guide?
Yes, it was the exclusive that came out with the Season 6 DVD set. They released a visual guide that includes two pages about Season 6.
Two pages. I'm going on eBay tonight getting this visual guide. But anyway, that's some fun tangents there. But the point is, first of all, me holding up this book is ridiculous because no one can see it but you guys. But I'm glad you like the Seinfeld.
I'm just so proud of both of us for queuing in on it.
Thank you for calling it out. You know, this Seinfeld bookmark has been a thing, like I said, throughout this whole podcast. And I'm glad I got some airtime after all this time. So anyway, Veritas is here, right? And Craig, you have the original script for this episode, correct?
Yes. And interestingly enough, this episode script is dated November 1st, 2007. And I believe the writer's strike began that week. So they were rushing to get 15 scripts out before everything shut down. And this was the last episode they shot, or, you know, they thought they were going to be able to shoot that year. And I was actually on the set that week to do interviews for my season 6 and 7 books, I believe. So I did that all while I was there. And, you know, there was very much a last week of school vibe going on. They took a crew photo when I was up there, and I'm actually in the photo.
Nice.
For that collectible.
Very cool.
They had to Photoshop Michael into it because he wasn't there at that moment. they were also filming a little bit of Pickups and Traveler at that time. I think they hadn't quite decided what they were going to do with the fate of, like, Robert Teague. You know,
when Robert Teague, Edward Teague.
Robert Queen.
Oh, man.
Everybody's mom's name Moira, but, you know.
So you're up there, too, where there's no kind of end in sight at the time for the writer's strike, right? So as far as they know, that it really is the season finale at that point.
In fact, I was there when they shot a scene of Tom and Allison walking down the hallway together. And Allison gave Tom a hug and was like, I think we just shot our final scene together, because she was intending on leaving the show at the time.
Wow.
Really? She was going to leave.
She was going to leave. And, like,
well, she had such great work to pursue elsewhere. So.
Well, it was just so...
It was before that, Matt.
No, she that existed. It hadn't gotten weird.
But it wasn't bad yet. And we all know what we're talking about. Please go on, Craig.
Yeah. No, it didn't get to the sex stuff yet, as far as I know. But, yeah, she was going to leave. And I remember, you know, Michael, even at the time, was like, no, I'm leaving after this season. I thought he was bluffing, and apparently they did, too. Yeah, so we didn't know, which makes it very interesting, considering that the original version of Veritas ended with cliffhangers for both Michael and Kristen. You'd think they'd kind of need to come back if the show came back.
That's crazy to me. Yeah, it's like, you have to at least film an alternate, like, they went back, obviously they came back from the writer's strike, and Smallville, and you pointed this out to me, Craig, off mic, that Smallville got 20 episodes this season, and that's the longest running.
That was the most any show got that season, because they managed to do 15 before the strike and 5 after the strike.
Better than Heroes, am I right? Nah.
What was Battlestar that year?
Battlestar, what was that, like, season 4 or something? Because Battlestar, like, didn't it break up seasons, like, in parts, I think? That was, like, one of the first shows I remember doing that. I was going
to say, does it even count? Because it was kind of like a 4.5, you know, like, that type of thing, yeah.
That same year, I think there wasn't even a season of 24 that year. Because
there would have been 12.
They would have only gotten to 13. We both made this in. It's fine.
So anyway, there's so much going on. That's insane. That's crazy. So I guess, you know, to jump ahead slightly, after Kristen and Michael leave, where they give Allison more money and she decides to stay, is that what the deciding factor was? Or
the story I heard, and I guess Allison won't hear me saying this because she's kind of busy right now, is that she wanted to do theater and she just didn't get any roles that she was looking for at the time.
Well, so can you imagine if they came back for season 8? With who is left? Clark and Jimmy. Everyone else is gone.
Of the, like, in the middle of this cliffhanger? Oh, my God.
Well, if you look at KryptonSite in May 2008, I guess it would have been, like, I posted, like, the official description for season 8. And at the time, I think the only series regulars that were signed were Tom, maybe Allison, and Erin Ashmore.
Yikes.
And Erica. There were only like four people.
Okay, obviously, yeah.
At least then you're like, you've got a solid Lois and Clark here, you know?
And Jimmy.
Henry
James.
That's crazy.
Man.
And still they do a cliffhanger with Lex at the end of the season.
Like you said, Craig, they were like, aha, Michael, very funny. He's like, no, bro, I'm leaving.
No, I'm gone.
And they were still in denial in season 8. Like, oh, we're going to show his head. And like, no, he's
not going to use his voice in... Requiem, I guess, was the episode.
No, they didn't use his voice. That was so strange.
They were going to.
Oh, they were?
They were going to, and Oziello even reported it as happening.
Come on, Michael. Wow. Pick up the phone and record him over the internet or something. Come on. Oh, man. Wow. It's a clean break for him, I guess. He didn't
I'm just saying, if Terry Hatcher can put a wig on, you can do that.
You can pick up a phone and do some lines.
Well, and then the season 10 premiere, there were very strong rumors that the idea was for the Lex to be in that was supposed to be Michael.
Like that makes so much sense.
It's, but, it's so clear. Yeah, we're getting ahead of ourselves by years, but yeah.
Well, actually, they took Lex out of the episode and replaced him with Tempest. That would make a whole lot of sense, right, Matt?
Speaking of Lois and Clark, Matt and I would talk about this. You know, Craig,
yes,
the biggest miscasting opportunity in Smallville is never getting John Shea on the show.
Oh, yeah.
And the obvious, like, if you have to work him into the show somehow, the obvious thing to do is he's an older Lex Luthor clone, so... Oh, and he's doing Mutant X at the time. Pick up the phone and call John Shea. You get in there for Lazarus.
And like a clone gone wrong so that he could be his Lex a little bit more. You know, like, I could have.
That's so cool. Like, that's, man, that's a missed opportunity. You got Dean, you got Terry, you got to get John in there.
Maybe Superman and Lois can get him on at some point.
That would be fantastic. He can be.
I wouldn't put it past him.
Lex. He can be Lex Luthor on Superman and Lois.
But first, they need to cast Dina Delaney as Lois Lane's mother.
Oh,
well, oh, it's her time. Absolutely.
Yeah, who isn't dead in this universe. So, well, as I referenced earlier, if you want to learn more about the writer's strike, you can check out Smallville, the official companion season 7 by Craig Byrne, wherever books are sold. But one quote I'll read in the pregame here, and then we'll jump into the episode from creator, executive producer Al Goff himself about this episode and the changes they made from the pre-writer's strike version and the post-writer's strike version. Quote, "We usually do three acts to a season. And for us, just where the strike was going to fall was going to be Veritas, and the plan was to have Lionel's death at the end of that episode as sort of the cliffhanger. Then, when the strike came along, we knew we wanted the end of the season to be Lex discovering what Veritas was hiding, which was Clark. So the plan was that he would get to the fortress and unlock its secrets. 5 or 6 days before the strike, when we could feel it coming, we went in and raised the cliff and put the whole ending of Lex getting the keys and finding the fortress as the finale of the episode." So we have that, and then one of the writers of the episode, Brian Peterson, went on to say this, quote, and this is a deleted scene on the DVD or Blu-ray, if you have it, quote, "The episode was going to end with Kara hurling her bracelet toward the camera. It would have been a homage to the crystal back in the season 4 finale commencement." Which, in the episode that airs, they fly into space, but in this deleted scene, in this original version of Veritas, this an unfinished deleted scene, very unfinished, by the way, I might add, if you've seen it, you know what I mean. But they go to the Amazon rainforest, and I believe that her bracelet was going to build a new fortress. That was the plan?
According to the script, that's what it does.
You know, we talked about all the cast was going to leave. Were Goff and Millar always going to leave too, Craig? Was that always their plan?
I don't know. I do feel like Alan Miles leaving the show and Michael leaving the show kind of broke within a week of each other.
Yikes.
Because I think the Alan Miles thing I ran on Krypton site on April 2nd, and people thought it was another April Fool's joke.
Oh, that's bad timing. That's
bad timing. I hope Tom Welling got a big paycheck that week.
Well, that was one of those things that I got away with posting on the site, and WB didn't call angry at me because I broke it before anybody else did.
Oh, wow.
That Alan Miles were leaving. And I had Michael's statement that he was leaving. And I sent it to the Warner Brothers publicist early so she didn't kill me. And she's like, okay, I'm going to give you 15 minutes lead time, but I have to send it to everyone. And then everybody linked to Oziello anyway. So RIP. But yeah, you know, like Michael wanted to announce it on Krypton site.
So, Craig, you've got the script. Do they go back and just chop a couple scenes out of this episode, or do they wind up adding in anything of substance afterwards?
I don't think they really added anything, which is probably why the episode is only 40 minutes.
That makes sense to me, because it's only 40 minutes, and we talked a little bit about this off mic, but not to be down on the show, like, they were working on, like, really crazy constraints doing this season, and again, did better than any other broadcast season of television at the time, which is incredible. But, like, it feels bloated. It doesn't feel tight. It feels like we're lingering on scenes for too long. It feels like dialogue that should be cut is still in there. And it like, just as a relic of television and what was going on at the time with the strike and all that, it's very interesting to watch this and know that. You can see that they really, even though it's just 40 minutes, it's not like it's not like it's a tight 40 minutes. They really kind of had to stretch it to make a, an episode of television here. Well, it's interesting.
I mean, they had stuff like Lex killing Lionel was in this episode.
Right.
It's a huge sequence.
That's gigantic.
Well, you know, I always assumed, and again, we talked about this slightly off microphone, I always assumed that the mental institution at the end, the hospital, like that was a pickup scene, and apparently that was in the original script anyway.
Yeah, that was originally a cliffhanger involving Lana.
That's so. Yeah, I'm watching this. I'm like, so what did they change, take out? But you guys, right? And we'll jump into it here. But it's like there's a lot of times where it's just oddly edited and stretched out. It's like a word print almost of itself, just to get every last second of every scene. Because if you cut out this climactic sequence, like the whole series is leading toward
right.
Lex killing his dad. Because you notice Lex just kind of disappears in this episode, and that's why.
Mm-hmm.
And so that starts to make a lot of sense. And yeah, I guess by proxy, the shortest season of Smallville, the shortest episode of Smallville. Let's get into it. Veritas.
We promised that we would meet the Traveler before we decided to pursue a way to control him.
Don't talk to me about promises. You've been working in secret with Dr. Swan, haven't you? And you, Edward, you and Genevieve, gallivanting around the world, you've been searching for those magical stones.
Lionel, this is bigger than the Queens or the Teagues or the Luthers.
Long before our families united, men died protecting the secret of Veritas. If Edward's ancestors are right, they've been sacrificing themselves to protect it for centuries.
If Dr. Swan's prediction is correct, the Traveler's coming now. We can't wait. That envelope and the secret inside it will give us ultimate power. You're afraid. You don't trust yourself with that, do you? There isn't one among us who could resist that temptation.
We agreed. We would not open that envelope unless the Traveler proved to be a threat. That's why Swan and I are flying to Zurich, to make sure that the secret is kept locked safely away, and ultimate power is left in the hands of the gods.
Robert.
Veritas is the 15th episode of Smallville's 7th season. It aired on March 27th, 2008, was written by Brian Peterson and Kelly Saunders, and directed by James Marshall. The episode starts out. We get some new establishing shots of the farm of a hawk.
It starts out like an episode of Animorphs or like Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman, speaking of the Teagues. Like, it's so weird.
It is odd. And like, and this is one of these instances, this sequence in particular, you're like, what? It feels off. Right?
Yeah.
It doesn't feel clean and polished. And
if it was an episode of Charmed, I'd be like, that bird's a warlock. I know it. You know?
Well, the bird is a shapeshift. The bird is Brainiac.
Enough.
Like, you have to use some deductive reasoning, but that is kind of cool, right? He's a shapeshifter. He turned into a hawk. He's literally watching Kara, as he says later. But she's doing some farm chores, which is nice to see. I did take note that she's wearing gloves. So I got a lot of arguments with people online when Tom Welling's pictures from the Christ on Earth happened. He's wearing gloves. I'm like, he's not has powers. I'm like, he might still have his powers. He wore gloves and he did chores before. But anyway,
I did wish they did the whole thing they did with Tom when he was lifting stuff and that they were hollow. So
I noticed it wasn't
light enough. Yeah.
Also, like, do you think Lex would have checked in what happened to Kara after Traveler since she like disappeared from his home with you know, alarms going off and stuff? But you know, probably whatever. Not. But Shelby's barking in the barn, so not always nice to see Shelby. And Kara goes in the barn to check out what's going on, and it's Brainiac, and James Marsters is back. He's back with a nice leather jacket, really slick looking, right?
He's a little more spikish here, just a little bit. He's got a little more attitude to it, where I'm like, all right, I see you, buddy.
You know what? I like Brainiac in season 7 more than season 5, I think. Is that a hot take? I don't know.
No, because I never cared for him in season 5. And then watching this today, I'm like, oh, no. He's great. He's doing something. It just felt so dry in season 5 for a lot of it.
I did appreciate, or just, it was kind of funny watching this scene, thinking that within 5 or 6 years, Laura Vandervoort would be playing a female version of Brainiac on Supergirl.
And then also playing a vampire. In one of the vampire shows. There's so many. I don't
know. She was a werewolf, I think. No, Bitten. I guess it was...
No, I think Doomsday was a werewolf, wasn't it?
And Jimmy Olsen was a ghost.
He was a werewolf.
Not our Jimmy. Superman Returns Jimmy.
You're right, though. Oh, my God.
And Brainiac's a vampire.
Yeah.
That's
so it's all connected.
It's
what we're saying. Hashtag it's all connected. But it is interesting. Kara doesn't know who he is. She's like, who are you? You know, because he starts talking about Krypton. It's a nice, cold, brisk day. She's like, how do you know about Kal-El? All this, he starts talking to her, and she's like, I've been watching you as a hawk, apparently. But it is interesting. He's like, hey, wouldn't you want to go all back? Go. What if I told you you could go back and, you know, go back to Krypton and stuff? She's like, I like my life here. And he's like, that's only because you have no option to return, which is interesting. So he's going to play on her wanting and yearning to go back to Krypton, which she would have more than Clark, obviously. Zor-El has already tried this. She actually tells him, like, you're not the first Kryptonian to try to use those memories against me. So she's learned and matured in this season. She literally says, to paraphrase, I've missed the part where that's my problem. Where he's like, I need you. Because he needs her for whatever his new evil plan is. And then you hear the super speed sound effect come in, and Clark comes in and saves the day. Plus one for Blue Shirt, Red Jacket, because he's in that. And this is a pretty good throw here. I like how they blow up some water tank. It kind of adds some element to the fight that we don't see a lot. So I thought that was pretty cool.
And it also took up a good, like, 30 seconds to add to the episode.
That's a great point as well.
It's interesting because the production values of that, of just, like, doing that and, like, pumping all that water is impressive to me. But I've never really noticed before how the set of the barn never really made sense. But it's really highlighted here when she goes in the side door and then instantly they cut inside the set and there's a wall behind her. And I'm like, oh, that's weird. I guess the set really has never made sense.
I don't think it has either. Even back in, like, Calling, it didn't make any sense.
No.
Right? I don't know.
Anyway, it was just a weird conflux of production problems, which is typical on, like, a standing set like that. But it's interesting.
Yeah, the barn was a complete standing set on the inside at the studio.
Right.
Two stories.
Right, which is why you've got that fake-ass wall behind it, or, you know, by the doors. Yeah.
There is another shot later on where, like, clearly, they did a pretty good job of it, but it's clearly Tom has been composited in to an exterior shot, like, through a window.
Oh, interesting.
And it just kind of reminds me of how, like, them finding the balance between, as you said, Craig, an interior set to this, all these establishing shots they have outside are pretty fun.
Sorry, that started as a compliment for the production values of the water, then I was just ragging on them. But yes, it does look cool here.
So Brainiac's like, hey, all right, well, just remember, if we did things my way, no one would have gotten hurt. And then he super speeds off
Boom.
And throws Kara and Clark on each side, and then he flies off to kind of rub it in. But no one would have gotten hurt, meaning, like, I don't know, Lana, but, like, so his plan, I don't know if that was the plan when they wrote this episode, but is to go back in time and kill Clark when he's a baby before he comes to Earth, right? That's his plan.
Great, so he would have gotten hurt. Brainiac plan.
That's kind of the plot of Krypton, the show.
Mm-hmm.
With a different villain, even though they make you think it's Brainiac, it's a different villain. It's a great show.
Lois and Clark.
That's right. It's a table
best episode of Lois and Clark, absolutely. Thank you very much.
This is an A-plus villain plan. You know, more villains should do this kind of thing. Hey, Legion. It happens in Legion, right? The guy with the axe comes to kill Clark before he's Superman. So, what's the new kids in town from Superman the Animated Series? Brainiac goes back in time to kill Clark in Smallville. Oh, as we've established, it's a very common plot.
This might be tired.
Also, so new kids in town. There's a scene in that, because it's a flashback episode, where Martha says to Jonathan, come back in, the Dukes of Hazzard is about to start. They had no idea how funny that reference was.
That is weird. That's like 5 years before Smallville. That's amazing.
The multiverse is real.
It really is hashtag all connected, y'all. But then we get to opening credits and we come back and Clark is explaining to Kara who Brainiac is. And he's like, yeah, last time Brainiac was here, he wanted me to release Zod from the Phantom Zone. And she's like, well, you destroyed Zod, right? And he doesn't really answer. Yes. And we move on. We're like, we're not sure. We're just going to move. We might bring him back a couple times.
It's so retroactively great setup for how dangerous Zod is later. But
I guess so.
They did not mean for it at the time. I can't imagine.
But he's like, so your dad was kind of evil. Do you think he and Zod were cool? And the Kara's like, no. The only thing Jor-El and Zor-El agreed on was their hatred for Zod. Right. And Craig, I want to ask you, maybe you knew this, like, was there any plan to make Zor-El a bigger part of season 7? Or was he just going to be like two episodes and done?
I have no idea.
He seems like he would be that's your big bad. Yeah, season.
I have no idea. I don't remember anything really about him except for his love of science.
You're totally right though, Zach, because then she's got to go on his side at some point and then realize the error of her ways and help Clark. And, yeah, okay.
Like Blue is, I did not like Blue at all. It's very retconny, it's very contrived, all that stuff. But I'm like, if you kind of space that out and make it like a mid-season finale or even a season finale, that stuff might work. Like Eclipse and all that stuff, like that might work. But they just...
What about the episode? Was Blue the episode where they had the flashback to her and Helen Slater on Earth in the 80s?
That was Lara. I also get Blue and Lara confused because they're pretty much the same thing going on.
I think they were shot back to back, maybe. possibly.
Well, that would make sense with the both guest stars, yeah.
Of them putting their photo in the back of that framed photo. Wasn't that photo like smushed when the meteor hit the house?
Oh, none of this. We got no time to make sense of that. Yeah.
There's enough plot holes to uncover in this episode.
I'm sorry, you're fine with Lionel's story for the past 7 years? But...
Matt, they explain it all right here. He was a changed man. No.
We're going to get to Veritas questions later on.
Very good. So they're like, okay, well, Clark and Kara are on the Brainiac case. But before they get on that, she's like, you need to learn how to fly. And I'm like, oh, okay. So that's like season finale level stuff. Like Clark's going to learn how to fly, right? So you're like, okay, that makes sense. Why she hasn't tried to teach him yet is crazy. Something they rectify in season 10.
Yeah, season finale stuff or episode 15 blue ball stuff, Zach.
So then we cut to Lois, who, much like the writers and her character, is just aimless, doesn't know what to do, has no direction.
Insert cool headline here.
Has a title. Yeah.
It is funny, right? She has cute. Her template of an article. It's like, cool headline here.
If only there was a typo.
Word processors exist.
Yeah.
Stop the Lois Lincoln spell thing. But I say that to say, like, Lois, she's made, it's always like 2 steps forward, 1 step back with her until we get to season 8. She's made some strides. She's at the Daily Planet now. But I still feel like they're kind of aimless with her, and she's comic relief. And this subplot that starts here is something that when Lance and I were watching together as roommates back in the day, we called it like Lois and Jimmy research some shit.
Oh, it's got like, Lois and Jimmy's Day of Fun written. But yeah, like, exactly.
But I love that aspect.
It's, I don't know, like it's fun, but I'm like, I wish you guys were involved in more serious things because they're both like just laughed off as comic relief. I'm like, no. Like this is Lois Lane and who we thought was Jimmy Olsen at the time, and they're like this. It's the comedy subplot. Like the show tells you not to take them seriously, and I'm like, I would like to take these characters, or at least Lois, seriously.
The show, their undercover hats later for Crooners or Us, you know, everything. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
But Jimmy comes over and he's like, "Hey, so I'm looking for a big story. Looks like you need a big story too." And they're like, "Yeah." So Lex hates us both. Let's go make him mad and go uncover a big story. And then she gets an email. From, according to the companion, an undisclosed source. I don't know, like some quote in there said that. I'm like, I didn't know if like the coroner sent out an all points bulletin or whatever, but Lois Lane, she has her own unseen connections, I guess. But she gets an email about Patricia Swann's murder, about her autopsy, and she's dead. So we'll take a screenshot of that. Jimmy is really excited about this. He's like, Lois Lane and Jimmy Olsen, what do you say? And, you know, we're both going to be on the show to the end.
Yeah.
she does ask, as a good cousin should, what about your girlfriend, Chloe? And he's like, Chloe got a call from Clark. She's busy now. So I'm like, okay. I always remember this. It's like they're looking at the screen. And then like, so Jimmy leans over and he kind of like is checking out Lois and like checks out her cleavage and then like gives her a look and she gives him a look and they just kind of move on. And I'm like, so strange. I don't know why they put that in there.
I super duper didn't catch that. Oh man.
I caught it, but I was like, did I just see what I think I just saw? I didn't remember it.
Right? It's like, this isn't like Lois and Clark were like, okay, sure, Jimmy's younger, he has a crush on Lois, whatever. But it's like, no. This is your girlfriend's cousin. Like, you can't be doing that. Like, it's funny. It's good for a laugh. The show obviously thinks it's like, haha, but it felt very out of place. And you're like, what?
It doesn't seem like what Jimmy is in this show.
No! And even this episode later on, he's like, yeah, this is... They find Lana's ISIS headquarters.
This is sexy.
I'm like, oh, this is sexy. Like,
this is scary. Oh, yes.
This is not the Henry James Olsen I've come to know and love over the last 2 years.
This is horny James Olsen.
I was just going to do this.
Sorry. And I haven't even had the wine that you've had.
So this establishes what they're going to be doing for at least a couple scenes before they get, again, written out of the episode. And then we have Gina, who is not Mercy Graves, so I thought it was going to be Mercy Graves this whole time. I was excited, but then she ends up not being. She comes in to Lex's office and at the mansion anyway and tells him that no one can trace the locket back to him because he had Patricia Swann killed to get that necklace. He's just fixated by this window, this Veritas window.
Very cool shot of him with the reflection of the window on it there. That very, very cool.
It is cool. And you know, I can only guess he's thinking, like, was that always that way? I feel like something
changed. I'm glad I put this in recently.
Well, you know, Michael really got along well with the actress Anna Galvin, who played Gina. And she had a really good... I interviewed her for the book. She had a lot of fun doing the show. and had hoped that they would keep bringing her back. But then, of course, Lex was gone. Did they end up killing Gina at some point?
They do. It's I think it's at Descent. She's like, it's okay. No one's going to know we killed your dad. He's like, yeah, you're right. No one will. And then she ends up being killed. But yeah, I think it was great that she was in like the whole season. That was so cool. See, if they had, if hindsight being 2020, you cast Tess as this character and don't kill her.
Totally.
And then it would have been a more smooth transition of Luther Power.
But they would have made him kiss at some point, and then they would have had like the, is it a Luke and Leia thing? Did they not know? You know, like it's.
Or they could have had her be Tess's assistant and had her and Tess kiss.
Sure.
Smallville wasn't ready for that. Dude, 2009 was not ready for that. Yeah.
So. 2009 was ready-ish for that. Smallville was not there. So,
that's probably more. That's a better way to put it. Yeah. But first of all, they're talking about Veritas. So episode title said episode plus one. I got the vibe here that she was like, is she like secretly in love with Lex or something? Because he's like,
totally.
Because she's like, most things we spend our lives searching for are usually right in front of us. I was like, all right, well, she's in love with Lex. He's like, all this time searching for Veritas, and it was so much closer than I thought, at least for the last three episodes when they changed this window. And then she asked him about the continuity problem of this. She's like, what do you mean? I thought you just found out about this. It's funny how the show is like, okay, we know we're making this up as we go. And Lex is like, yes, I had my memory was lost after the meteor shower, but ever since I got shot, I'm starting to remember things.
Which and bullet is this? Because there,
this is the one
several.
To the middle between the eyes in fracture. He totally should have been killed. But actually, in the companion, one of the writers, and I forget who because it was a few episodes ago, but they actually mentioned their logic is, well, you know, when Clark was running around in his head, it kind of uncovered some memories that he hadn't remembered. I'm like, okay, that's fine. I
so
guess.
So once again, Clark's fault.
It's all your fault,
Clark. Great. Great.
He talks about cryptic symbols and mystic stones. I'm like, oh, we're going to mystic stones, you say? We're going to mention season four. We're going to acknowledge that in continuity, I guess, huh? What we get here, we get a flashback, right? Arrow style to baby Lex.
Quite literally, yeah.
Baby Oliver Queen with a bow and arrow
on. The bow and arrow.
How else would you know that he's Oliver Queen? Baby Jason Teague and baby Lex Luthor and, three of these four people are dead by the end of the show.
Of the season.
Lex is resurrected, but still, it's kind of sad to see. We just saw Patty Swan brutally murdered. Now she's a little girl. Jason T, well, I mean, he kind of turned into a bad guy, but there is no gimmick for Jason. He's not like holding a football or something. So
if
at
only.
Least, what restraint?
One of the young, Dean Winchesters to play him.
He's running around with an Eiffel Tower, you know?
Well, the kids are playing hide and go seek, which is cute. You know, there was a little touches of character here with these kids. It's just cute. Like Patty Swan has to count to 10, but she kind of peeks and sees Oliver hiding behind a clock. I'm like, you know what? That's cute. That's what kids do. I thought that was pretty cute. Lex, he had asthma before the meteor shower. They remembered that. That's some great continuity. He pulls out his inhaler. This show is on point with the continuity, let me tell you.
And also, I like that in this meeting room that Lex is like sneaking in and seeing Lionel and I'm not going to try first names, Teague, and Robert Queen, and eventually Swan. Like, all the family crests are over the fireplace, and of course the Luther crest includes the Veritas symbol as well.
As it always did, Matt. Yeah, as it always did.
Of course.
So Lex hides in some closet, which has, like, a vent, which opens to, like...
giant, yeah.
The main room.
The fireplace.
He's in a closet of some kind. It's very strange. Lex is always, this whole episode, he's like peeking through things and looking at things, right? And so he sees...
Good thing he was precocious as a kid, because otherwise...
We never would have found out
any
about
of these
necklaces.
Plot points, yeah.
But, it, you know, I don't know what it is about John Glover. Like, they de-age him so well.
But like he still has the same haircut he has in the present.
I was going to complain about that as well. However, you're right. And I think 90% of it is acting.
Well, also, but to the point about the haircut, in the pilot of Smallville, he had short hair as well. I mean, it wasn't as we think about Lionel with a mane.
They could have given him some extensions in that.
Yeah, he had like a little tiny mullet going on in
yeah. Agreed.
In an episode where they have egregious continuity breaks, I will appreciate the small things.
And I'm saying spend an extra 15 minutes.
Let's discuss.
I want to know how Jason's dad goes from this guy to holographic doctor.
Okay, what is okay? Let's talk about this though. So yeah, like I said, we have Robert Queen.
Yes.
We have Edward Teague. We have Lionel Luther, and then Virgil Swan's going to come.
And then we have a wheelchair. Yeah,
we have a wheelchair, which is I don't know how I feel about how they handled Dr. Swan, but we have Edward Teague here. Edward Teague, who they were like per last episode, he had been killed at some point. When was this? Because in season four, he was very much alive. Right. Jason talks about his dad. That's a continuity break. And also this, and I remember, Craig, I remember this reading on the Krypton site spoiler page back in the day. Jane Seymour was potentially going to come back for these, yes, for these flashbacks. Is that correct?
So here's the deal. So the November 1st version of the script has Dalton Teague, Jason's father.
Timothy Dalton Teague, very good. Yes.
Yes. And then they sent out a revision on the 4th of November where it was Genevieve Teague and Michael Oziello from, I think he was with EW back in the day. Now he's with TV Line. He even reported on Genevieve Teague coming back. I don't know if she just wasn't available because, I mean, the script was written in November and the episode wasn't filmed until late January. So I'm assuming that she just couldn't do it. So then they reverted back to Mr. Teague, who became Edward later in the season.
Hmm. Rick Ravadello is the actor here. He is not Robert Picardo. I love Robert Picardo. I met him at a convention once, got a picture with him. I told him that you, sir, are my favorite character on Star Trek Voyager, even though Star Trek Voyager is not my favorite Star Trek show. I actually didn't even mention Smallville to him. I was wearing a Star Trek shirt at the time. I will still post that picture of me and him when it comes time.
Sorry, was it a Star Trek convention or just a regular convention?
It was actually San Diego Comic-Con. So I had full right to say something about Smallville. I didn't, yeah. But it's Edward Teague, whatever. Like, I just... Like, so much of this continuity about season 4 and 7, they're all both pretty messy. And this, like, do I appreciate the attempt to connect them and clean them up? I guess, but it still doesn't make any sense.
It would have been fun to see Genevieve again, though.
Oh, no, that would have been fantastic. That would have, like, that would have elevated this episode. Just kind of to show, like, because Genevieve Teague herself was a retcon in season 4 because they were like, well, we're going to do more stuff with Dr. Swan and Bridget Crosby, but. Obviously, Christopher Reeve passed away. Margaret Kidder didn't want to do the show anymore. And like, oh, what do we do? And they brought in...
History has proven if you can get a Jane Seymour, get a Jane Seymour.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Timothy Dalton Teague.
Right.
James Bond, Bond Girl. It's all could've hashtag. It's all connected. So many things are connected. Roger Moore could have been one of these people. Roger Moore, Timothy Dalton as Edward Teague. That would have done it for me. Anyway, Connor Stanhope, by the way, Little Lex from Fracture is back. I think he is so good as young Lex. I'm glad he gets to come back again in season.
He's probably like 20 now.
Older than that.
Yeah, he's got to be. This is like, this is like a 15-year-old episode. So I guess so. But he, you know, he's fantastic. So I'm glad he got to show up more than once over the course of the series.
Does he comes back again. In season 10?
He comes back in season 8 and season 10.
He's High School Musical kid.
No. That was Lucas Grabeel.
That's the Lex from Reunion.
All right, I'll leave.
And season 10 as well. So
in Scion.
But no, good for them for like casting these actors as different ages of Lex. That was very well done. So anyway, totally. He's seeing this whole thing. Lionel's like, there's no point to knowing about the Traveler unless we can control him and all these. And they're trying to open this envelope, right? And it's like this envelope is ultimate power, right? And you guys are afraid of it. It's
actually a picture of Doomsday.
So... Can we get into Veritas questions?
Please, Matt, you have been itching for years to talk about it. What do you got?
For so long. When did Dr. Swan discover the Traveler message thing?
That's a good question, Matt.
Cool. Okay. When do we know, like, when this whole Traveler thing started? Like, was it just, like, is this an interpretation of the SOS from Krypton as it's about to blow and they're putting him in the rocket and Jor-El's like, hey, this is happening? Or was this like even a long ago predestined thing?
Well, clearly it was before the meteor shower because Lex still had hair.
Right. No. And I'll buy that because I'm gonna give little Kal-El like 3 years in space to get to Earth. But like this Traveler thing, do we have any idea where it started? When it started for Swan and the rest of the Veritas crew, or is that just never answered?
Well, there is that tie-in comic book, like Justice and Doom, and there are all these panels, and they're like, they try to tie in like Ezra Small and the caves and the Teagues and like
see,
even
this
in the
is
scene,
what I was worried about. Okay,
this is when he's like, oh, if Edward's correct, his family and ancestors have been sacrificing people for the stones or something like that, right? So like they try to tie it, that's the problem. Like that's not, like the caves, right? Like all these prophecies, like. You never explain how these started, and like, give me some sort of explanation. But it's like, how do they? The traveler, Dr. Swan, has this journal that Patricia Swan gave Clark last episode. What is in there? What are they talking
and
about?
And then, like, isn't that the journal that Tess looks at next season? And she's like, "Oh, there was a doomsday too."
You think I just read the Cliff Notes of the Veritas?
Right. Exactly.
When did you have those?
All right. See, this is what I'm worried. Like, it can't be a predestined thing, and the explosion of Krypton is a surprise to everybody. You know, like it's just.
I don't know, like, Craig, did we need them to try and connect all this stuff? What do you think about their attempt here?
Okay, unpopular opinion, I actually thought the Veritas thing could have been really cool.
It could have been an operative word there, but yes.
Yes, like, if they had made a better plan for the whole thing, like, if they had started dropping hints a lot earlier, maybe.
Sure.
Like, if they had the Veritas, like, window back in season one, and then you didn't come up to it until now.
Or just don't make it as obvious a retcon. That we've been looking at that goddamn room for the past 7 years.
I would have accepted it better if even at the start of season seven it was there. Because at least that said you had some plan. But like three episodes before, give me a break.
Well, like, I do like aspects like the Lionel being behind the death of the Queens.
Okay, I like the Queens. Yeah. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
I don't like Dr. Swan. I don't think they should have him kill Dr. Swan. To me, that feels odd.
Agree. Yeah. But like, as far as like retcons and making it work go, the idea that that's in the pilot and then you establish seven seasons later that he's reading that paper knowing that he killed those people, like, that's fantastic.
That is cool. That is the one element to me that sticks out above the rest.
Right. But the rest of it, it just gets mired in this, like, this doesn't make sense mess, you know?
Has he always been wearing this necklace? We're almost there. We're gonna.
And why did he take it off right after they left? Right. It's like, hide it for a little bit longer.
I hope they don't walk right back in, but, I like how Lionel's trying to convince these guys, we didn't open this. This is ultimate power. You guys are afraid of it. Like, because he's like, I know what to do with it. You guys are whips. I think a better retcon, and me and Roka talked about this in our last episode, would have been like, if Lionel had not been part of Veritas, but tried to, like, get in it, and that way he wouldn't know Dr. Swan, because clearly in Legacy, him and Dr. Swan don't know each other. Like, there was, like, a millimeter of wiggle room. But they're, you know, it's like you had them meet. I'm so glad Christopher Reeve got a scene with John Glover, by the way, because John Glover is the best actor on the show. So I'm glad that exists. But it kind of like, those guys didn't know each other. They certainly didn't meet every summer to talk about the Traveler, right? With their kids.
At their redressed house that looks like the Luther Mansion.
Also, yeah. Patty Swan's mob, totally Bridget Crosby, right?
Oh.
Right?
Sure. Why not?
I mean, why not? There's nothing in here that tells me he's.
It's
she's
that, not. Or it's Martha Kent. It's Annette O'Toole. So, you know, like,
why'd you say
your
name?
Two choices. Oh, man. Or Lacey Warfield, whoever that was. Mariel Hemingway. There it is. As I say, as I have my Superman 4 poster behind me.
10 feet away from your Seinfeld bookmark.
So we're just going to talk about my entire office tonight. But I know I like this with Lionel wanting to open it and stuff. Like, because at this point, we don't know what's in there. Because they extended several episodes, it becomes this video game fetch quest. Like, well, you have to go to the box and you have to put the thing in the fireplace.
It made me think, like, when was Da Vinci Code big? I think it was already stale by this point. But, like, it feels very that, you know?
That, you know what? I had never thought about that before. That is very, like, Secret Society Da Vinci Code. Relic thing. They go to churches.
Movie plot as seasons. Yeah.
Movie plots. Robert Picardo was carving symbols into people's chests.
Dressed like a monk.
Just like a monk. Just like Paul Bettany.
Just
Bettany.
Yeah.
Oh man. But the plan here is that Queen and Swan are going to fly to Zurich and put this envelope in a safety deposit box there because it's a secret.
Remembers for 15 years.
He remembers that because of this. Because those resurfaced memories he forgot, Craig.
They're like, it's like present day memory. Like he's never even thought of these things before. So they're fresh. They're fresh memories.
It is very weak. It is the contrivance and the convolution and the retcon is pretty weak. I think you could have gotten to where you needed to get without that. Because I don't think they'd ever established before the last couple episodes that Lex had forgotten stuff after the meteor shower. He had lost his asthma, he had lost his hair, but he had not lost his memories.
And it's just a slap in the face to fic writers, frankly, who sometimes work so hard to work their stories into a show, show to be like,
whatever. Who's gonna care? Who's gonna be sitting on a podcast?
Who even watched season four? It's fine.
Years later, we said stones and witches and stuff. Isn't it? We acknowledge its existence. Yeah. We almost got Jane Seymour in this scene.
Nobody can rewatch these without syndication, so it's fine.
We're not striking for nothing.
Yeah, exactly.
I love that we're tying literally everything together in our conversation. We are tying our conversation together much better than Smallville tying all together.
Thank you.
In this plot. But no, ultimately, it's whatever. It's cool to see flashback Lionel. It's cool to see this, but it just doesn't add up. And we see Queen's Key, but before it gets, you know, Lionel can really convince him of anything, we see a wheelchair roll in and it's Dr. Swan. And
what was your complaint here? Because I'm like, as it happened, I'm like, oh, they couldn't have done dialogue or anything like that. So would you have just not wanted that to happen at all? Because I kind of like just the fact that it happens.
But there is something, I don't know, it's kind of like Godfather 2 where you don't see Marlon Brando, like, oh, he's here, and they all leave. Like, maybe you should have done that. The wheelchair, though, is interesting because there was like, yeah, Marlon Brando, Jor-El, it's all connected. Yeah. but something about establishing that he had been in a wheelchair for who knows how long. Right? Like, the meteor shower didn't, like, injure him. Like, there was all these, like, maybe he got crippled in the meteor shower. No. I'm glad they never, like, on the Krypton Side forums, which still exists, by the way. Everybody go check him out.
I was a part of those, but I don't remember the discussion. Keep going.
But
yeah, I was just going to say, one thing it does back you into a corner about is I assumed that Dr. Swan had whatever accident he had the same time Christopher Reeve did.
Because this was early 90s.
Yeah, because there's that magazine cover of him in the early 90s, like in his office in one of the episodes.
Right. Oh, it's a picture of his head, though. It could go either way.
I was going to say he could be in a chair in that photo.
Yeah. So I never really thought about when he had gotten it or not. I'm glad they didn't tie in like his injury with the meteor shower, because that would have
been in bad taste to me. Yeah, exactly. Because
to me, that's what like Margot Kidder was kind of upset about. Like, and I don't feel the same way she does about him being killed off on the show, because what you have to address the character, but like when you start tying into plot points and stuff, and that's why I don't necessarily like Lionel having killed him, you know, to me that's a little much, but you know.
I just see, because I assumed he had died of natural causes.
Yeah. And then you get Patty Swan in here is pretty much saying like, oh yeah, you killed my dad. And Clark's like, you killed Dr. Swan. And I'm like, okay.
And Jason's father.
We all love Jason.
I was there when they filmed that scene.
Edward, we were all there. So this flashback ends, and we come back, and Lex tells Gina that she has 24 hours. I'm like, why is there a timetable now? I never understood there was this ticking clock.
Great.
This is the last episode of the season.
Yeah, exactly. It's the last episode of the season. She needs to hurry it up.
So then we get Lionel going to his office, just another day of the office, and Lois and Jimmy are acting like they're gardeners here. And we got a plus one for Lois's costume closet whenever Lois wears a fun outfit, and this is her outfit.
Pruners are us, baby. Yep.
Pruners are us. Are there actual gardeners that they knocked out downstairs and stole their uniforms, and they're like stashed their bodies in the back of a van while they do this? That's what I'd like to think.
Is there a world where the Daily Planet has a, like, if you've got to do something preposterous, we have a room for this?
Yes. Pick out your disguise and get out there in the field, right? And then this is the, like, Lois and Jimmy figuring stuff out. Your mileage may vary. Craig likes it a lot. I kind of don't, but fair enough. But they, as Lionel refers to it, they ambush him in his office, and they're like, why did you kill Patricia Swan? It is pretty funny how Jimmy just keeps taking pictures, and he's like, put that camera away!
Put the camera away!
And, it's interesting because, you know, they are ambushing with him with this information, but they actually convey some important plot information to him about how every day of her life, Patty Swan, every photo of Patty Swan, she's wearing this locket and it was missing. And you can tell on her neck that it was removed by force. And I was like, okay, they shot her. Why did they rip the necklace off her? Why didn't they just take it off delicately when she was dead?
Because that wouldn't give them a clue.
Because they're cool. Like, I don't know.
That's a great defense, right? Anyway, that's what I thought. Okay, but fair enough, right? So they give, you can tell Lionel's like, when he's looking at all this stuff, right? He's like, okay, I didn't know about this stuff. This is interesting, right? But then he like triggers his silent alarm under his desk and the security shows up. And then he says, that is all from the dynamic duo, which is a good line. Nice. I thought that was pretty fun. Nice. A little Batman reference. He did the voice of the Riddler in Batman the Animated Series. If you follow John Glover's Twitter account on Twitter, do you think that was the most important thing he ever did, by the way?
No kidding. He must get a lot of autographs for that. That kind of blows my mind.
Which is really funny because I remember seeing Glover probably around Smallville season 5 and he did his Alzheimer's walk. Mm-hmm. And one of my friends called me on the phone and I said to Glover, I was like, can you do the Riddler voice for him? And he's like, I don't remember how to do the Riddler voice.
But is it that different than his like Lionel voice? Really? It's just a more serious John Glover.
Yeah, it's Lionel by way of like Dennis Nedry. It's just a little mocking. Yeah. That's what I was thinking.
His Riddler didn't wear a bag on his head.
Oh, goodness. We don't have the time to talk about that right now. But so as soon as they leave, we were joking about this a little bit earlier. He undoes his tie. He's like, okay, he's under a lot of stress. That's fine. But then he reaches into his shirt. He pulls out this necklace, which is the other key that we saw in the flashback. Mm-hmm. And then he takes it out and looks at it. It's so funny. This is not just this episode. It's a trope of things. Like Lex has done it before on Smallville. Like, oh, someone just asked about something mysterious and left. I'm going to go look at it now.
I'm going to go open that little box with the key in it.
Secret compartment I have, right? And the implication is he's been wearing this the whole time.
He didn't have it on in prison.
Where did he go in prison? So I don't want to think
about it. When he was getting that massage and he had all that hair.
Eats that peach.
Yes.
That's true. Yeah, so where was this? Was this in his safe? I don't know where it's been, but we've seen him shirtless, unplanned shirtless. He gets kidnapped a lot, you know, like that kind of thing. So he would have that. I'm sure that they thought, oh man, he's been wearing this necklace the whole time. I'm sure that's what they thought, but it just doesn't track like so much of this episode, unfortunately. But he has the other key. So clearly he did kill the queens and take their key, as we're going to find out soon.
Mm-hmm.
Then we get this shot of Clark kind of, I guess, watching Kara fly. And she flies into the barn and is going to train him, but, you know.
She flies in from the other direction.
Yeah, very strange.
Yeah.
It's behind.
Like, there's nothing in this scene, really. It's cute that she tries to, like, push him. But otherwise, this is one of those scenes where I was just like, a lot of the Clark stuff really feels padded. And you kind of miss whatever they would have cut out for
Clark
for his
stuff
story.
Feels padded on Smallville?
Yeah, I know.
No, but I think they were just trying to hint, if this had been the season finale, that, oh, he's going to finally fly.
Right.
He apparently sent Lana to ISIS. We'll get to that in a second. But so she wouldn't see him try and fail, I guess. Sure, she didn't. I would like that encouragement if I was trying to do something difficult. But sure. But Clark and Lana are not a healthy relationship.
This was my whole thought process that entire time. I was like, wouldn't you want her around to motivate you? Oh, no. But you guys keep secrets all the time. So never mind.
And like, to your point, it is kind of a nothing scene. Kara does say up, up, and away. It's so easy. Literally everyone else from Krypton could do it immediately. I'll buy that there's some mental block, I guess, from him. And obviously that's what it is on the show, in-universe reason. But what is he afraid of? He's invulnerable.
I got nothing.
If he falls, nothing will not hurt.
Yep. I really have no idea. It's such a weird choice for them to go into this when they know they want to do another season, whether the creative team or, you know, the actors stick around or not. And the whole time they've said they're not doing, you know, Flights No Tights, right? You know, like, it's weird that they kind of spent the time on this, and it makes the rewatch that much more excruciating, where you're just like, no, he's not going to get this. So like, is he going to learn something from trying or not? And he doesn't. And so it's just kind of like a road to nowhere.
Well, I just have something to tell you all about this episode when we get to later in the episode.
Ooh, I'm excited.
Stay tuned. Yes.
Stay tuned to always hold on to Smallville.
Following up this conversation, because Clark's like, this is a waste of our time. You know, we need to be looking for Brainiac, right? And it is interesting.
Couldn't be more accurate. Yes.
That's true. It is interesting. It's something I hadn't considered before. They're like, hey, the sun doesn't affect him like it does us. He's a machine, so he needs to draw on energy, so we should look for energy. And I'm like, that's interesting. I like that. Do you not like it, Matt's making a face. He disagrees.
No, I don't like it. It feels
how
so...
else are you supposed to find Brainiac?
Man? I know. And in that respect, it does make sense to me. But like, I'm like, he's this supercomputer thing. He's pulling energy from like just around him, kind of like Bluetooth wise. Is that what's happening? You know,
he's like Electro from Spider-Man.
Sure. Okay.
I mean, usually the brain power would come from Chloe, because Clark can't do anything for himself. So I say this was progress for Clark.
Okay. Okay.
Oh, that he's coming up with it himself.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, I understand why it's there, because we have to try to track him somehow, but it just felt a little lazy.
And it is a pretty effective edit, because they're talking about, we need to find where he might be drawing this power. And then we cut to Isis.
Right.
And we see all the computers.
Lana Lang started Isis.
There's a line here in a minute, which just made me laugh out loud, frankly, but we'll get to it. But, you know, we see the computers flickering, and it's a pretty effective kind of like horror sequence, because she kind of goes up to a monitor and it goes out, and then we see Brainiac in the reflection. And wow, like, this is Kristen Couric's final episode as a regular. If you don't count her video message in Arctic.
Yeah, that's true.
She has two lines. One of which is, let me go, when Brainiac's trying to get her in the sequence. The other one is at the end. And I'm like, wow. And I was thinking, and then I start backtracking. I'm like, what's the last scene she had with all these characters? Like, her and Chloe had some scenes last episode. I can't remember the last scene she had with Lex. What's the last scene Kristen Couric and Michael Rosenbaum had together? Wrath? Like, maybe.
Wow.
Way to fumble that ball. Like, I mean, obviously she came back in season 8. Lex wasn't back, but then not bringing her back at all. And like, there was, when you elevate Clark, Lex, and Lon to like your big three characters, like, you need some closure with these guys. And
yeah,
I don't know. I wish they would have. Well, obviously there's more to talk about how Lana closes out the series.
But I was going to say, I can't wait to talk about season 8, but at least she came back and did that. You know, not at least like she owed it to us as fans or anything like that. But like, it's nice that they do that, get that closure eventually. Cause you're right. I didn't think of that, but
the reason it happened is because she got the Street Fighter movie. So she made a deal with the Smallville producers. I miss episode 716 to 720. I'm going to owe you 5 episodes later.
Interesting.
So it was just a contract to come back for more.
That makes sense to me.
But this is what I always thought about season 7. I guess, so Craig, had this truly been the season finale, they would not have owed them any episodes because the season would have ended?
Yeah, I assume so. Then they got back up, but Kristen wasn't available.
Okay, so sometimes in my head I'm like, oh, wait, if it ended at Veritas, Michael Rosenbaum and Kristen Couric still would have had to come back for 5 or 6 episodes, but you're saying that's not the case. It was like a seasonal thing.
What is interesting, though, is I think John Glover was on like a 13-episode contract, mm-hmm. and as it ended up, he only was in about 9 episodes this year.
Hmm. I guess you can't bring Lionel back after Lex is gone.
Yeah, I mean, they did bring him back in season 10.
Yeah, not till
very
much later.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. See? Oh, they should have done the body swap between Lex and Lionel, and they could have had Lex.
You can bring him back, but not as the Lionel you know.
I'm not the Lionel you knew. So watching these scenes, I was like, this is how Kristen Couric goes out as a regular. Wow. And then he does something creepy to her brain. Like, it's really, he is the Brainiac 3 holes in the head, which is interesting, but the eyes and the forehead, and basically makes her catatonic, as we find out. And it's actually pretty disturbing, actually, that kind of body horror.
It's gross. It's like a crypto lobotomy. It's really weird.
So then we get Clark at the Daily Planet, and he's reading a headline of Patricia Swan having died. We'll take a screenshot of this. And Chloe's just showing up. And at first I'm like, where have you been? I thought you were helping Clark, but she was at the water and power department. So we got a +1 for Chloe's unseen connections and looking for power surges and things. However, they just figured out that power surge thing. So what was she doing before that? Anyway, it doesn't matter. It's fine.
They have cell phones now. It's fine.
Yeah, and off-screenville, Clark called her.
She's still looking for that bracelet. She doesn't know if it was found yet.
So they find that all the power surges around, like, they're like, oh, Brainiac gets around. Like, it's kind of around the world, around the country, right? And the most recent power surge was at Isis. So Clark speeds there. And, you know, I had forgotten about this scene. I thought Clark and Lionel had already had their final scene in Traveler, but I was just surprised as Clark to see Lionel. It's like, what are you doing here? Leaving a note for Lana. And he's like, listen, son. And man, Clark drops some lines on. He says, the only real son you have hates you just as much as I do. It's like, damn, Clark. And again, I always think about Lucas Luthor. They always forget about that. All they needed, Craig, all they needed was one line in one episode, and they could have said something about Lucas, but they literally forget he exists.
Or that, you know, Lionel killed him as part of Veritas or something.
Yeah, he killed everybody else. Too close. He killed Dr. Swan. He might as well have killed Lucas found the secret. He went to the Zurich place and they killed him because he wasn't a member of Veritas. That's actually, we're joking about it. I would have accepted that over them just for
it doesn't work,
existed.
Guys, because his is a holy mission to salvation for Jor-El.
Redemption. So, yes. But yeah, this is where Clark, he accuses Lionel of killing Dr. Swan of the Queens, and we know he killed the Queens, but still, the Dr. Swan thing I'm not so hot on, but Lionel's like, look, it doesn't matter what you think of me, or that you have to listen to me, like, take this, and then he's going to give Clark the key, which would have worked out great if Clark would have had that key, that would have solved a lot of problems, but Clark's like, there's nothing you could give me that I want, right, or whatever. He just blows him off. He's so focused on Lana, which right. is Clark's problem this entire show, that like he could have solved a lot of his upcoming problems had he just taken this key from Lana. But honestly, I get why Clark doesn't trust Lionel anymore. And just regardless of what Patricia Swan told him about who he killed, like he put him in a kryptonite cage last week. So,
oh, 100%.
Lionel, boy, you cried wolf one too many times.
As yeah, later. He has burned through all his goodwill that he was ever owed by Clark Kent, and then some. It's over.
Yeah, and this is the final time Clark and Lionel interact on the show. It's kind of tragic, right? Because Lionel, like, he's still
dimension.
Yeah, Earth 2 Lionel. Yes, we know. But you know, that's the power of John Glover right there. For all the stuff this guy does, like, you feel sorry for Lionel. Like, it's all like, you understand why nobody trusts him, but you're like, I mean, you know, he's repented. Yeah. He's repentant now.
It's an interesting show of the power dynamic, how it's switched over the years too, because like, though he still holds the power with most of his relationships, like here in this last scene with Clark, which I didn't even know it was at the time, but like he's groveling for him to listen and like try to be convinced that he's helping. But it's just, like I said, it's just that road is done at this point.
So then Clark rushes home. And he says, he sees Lana. He says, thank God you weren't at ISIS. That made me laugh. They didn't know. They didn't know at the time, but it is funny. And, you know, Lana is just there boiling some water, just catatonic, burning her hand. Why would she be
gross.
Doing this?
That was my question. Like, there's no real need for that. But it's just, it's almost like Brainiac's, like, lobotomy just like has her running like really simple task programs or something. Like, it's the only sign that we get that she actually is at all like aware, right? Like, how did she get home? She must have driven herself, right?
Well, Brainiac maybe brought her because Lionel tells Clark, the receptionist said that a visitor came and then she left.
Oh, so good point. Okay.
Brainiac came. I guess Brainiac right. dropped her off.
Maybe Brainiac was like driving at the time. For
setting
her
up in the kitchen, turning on the stove, having her hold the thing.
So as the episode aired, was this Lana's last scene?
Well, except for the final scene at the end. At okay. the mental institution yeah, at the hospital.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I didn't remember if that was actually in the episode or I just imagined it.
Too late, Kal-El, and the angel statue.
Okay, so that wasn't there. Okay.
The angel statue. I want to talk about the angel statue. But so it is creepy, right? Because Lana has burned her hand and this body horror is always very disturbing. Clark like, finally looks in her eyes and they're, you know, catatonic and all white. And then Kara comes in. She's like, Clark, I thought we were going to stay in contact. That. She's just carrying on, like, frustrated with Clark, not even registering what's going on here. Then we you know, she sees that what's happened to Lana, and Clark's like, it's Brainiac, he's done something, and she feels guilty. She's like, it was supposed to be me.
I do like this idea that Brainiac is somehow using her as a conduit here. Like, she starts writing in the Kryptonian after Lana, she starts writing Kryptonian after that of like Brain Kara to the Daily Planet, essentially. Like, I like this. I like the way, you know, in a villain plot wise, that he's toying with Clark by taking over his love and still making it very clear that he's in complete control, which he does in this next scene. Yeah.
Yeah. So this message is deliver Kara, Daily Planet. Right. And then Kara sees that and super speeds off. And then I guess she just waits on the roof until Brainiac shows up, because we got some episode to go here. But that's where we leave Lana. It is creepy. And as you find out at the end of the episode, Brainiac's like controlling everything about her, like every breath she
takes.
That's
what I mean. Like, it's creepy.
Every move she makes, he's watching. That's the song. Like, we'll move on. So anyway. Lois and Jimmy still investigating shit. So they go into the ISIS the foundation. They both say like, wow, this is so, and at the same time, Jimmy's like sexy and Lois is like creepy.
Creepy.
It's like, yeah, Jimmy, again, why are you like this horny James Olsen? That's the new name for him, as we said earlier. They find her secret computer room. I didn't know that they knew about that secret computer room. I guess they know about it moving forward.
Oh, I thought it was just open. That's how they found it, right?
Oh, no, I know. I'm just saying, like, okay. I didn't realize they even knew about that. Like, they know Chloe is running ISIS next season. Do they know she's doing secret computer stuff? Because neither of them know about Clark's secret at this point, so they shouldn't. Anyway, it's fine.
Again, of all the crimes in this episode, what do you want to fight about, dude?
Well, Lionel left this note. He's like, Lana, urgent, right? On the table there. And then Lois and Jimmy find it. And it's this envelope of evidence. Because, of course, you know, Lois and Jimmy think that Lionel killed Patricia Swann.
Right.
But it was Lex. And Lionel has the evidence to prove it. He has Lex followed and photographed, as they always do to each other. So that's very on brand. He has Lex talking to Patricia Swann's driver, who ends up being her killer, connecting Lex to the murder. So that proves Lionel's innocence. And then we get Lex in his Daily Planet office. So it's nice that we can do things outside the Luther Library for a change. So that is nice. And, you know, I distinctly remember in, I believe it's Descent, when he has the passport, it's like, son, travel far, right? On his passport. It's just a generic passport here. They didn't have that yet. So that disappointed me. Because that always, like, that is, I can see him giving him that with that thing. That was such a perfect thing. But it's just a generic passport. And, he's getting ready to go for Switzerland, and then Gina tells him that the deposit box takes two keys, both keys at the same time.
Both keys at the same time? Oh!
Lex is going to need two keys. And then we get another flashback.
But luckily, he can recall flashbacks just by looking at like he happens to have this prop from the pilot briefcase. He did the same thing with the first flashback, too, where he just, like, turns around and looks at the Veritas thing. He's like, I need to remember. And then there we are.
He pulls out his prop from the pilot of Smallville, the Queen Industry CEO, lost at sea. Now, Craig, when they wrote that headline for the Smallville pilot, right, that was supposed to reference Green Arrow, right?
Yeah.
Not his dad.
Oh, yeah.
But again, great... but great retconning.
But it still works because we never saw the fine print. We didn't know who it was.
Yep, right.
It's good fine. Point. But that's a good clever retcon. We're not anti retcon. We're just like, you got to pay attention to the finer details. So anyway,
work within the bounds of what.
What other cool
told
Smallville
us.
Props does he have in his briefcase? Exactly. I wonder, because he just pulls out that guy's signed by John Glover.
Exactly.
But we get this flashback. It's pretty cool. We see little Lex playing with a Warrior Angel action figure. Mm-hmm. So just, man, in a season with so many, they have so much cool continuity, but then so much like frustrating continuity at the same
time.
They
want us to love them. Yeah, but it's just not quite there.
But we have Lex going up to a door again, looking through a crack. That's what he's been doing this whole episode. Just being a voyeur. And Lionel's on the phone. Talking about like, oh, did the divers find anything? Oh, no, he's on the phone with, well, I assume, Genevieve Teague?
Right.
Maybe Edward Teague.
A Teague representative of
the Teague family is on the phone with Lionel. So they're talking about this and that. One of his security guys comes in and he's like, oh, did the divers find anything? And this and that. Everybody's dead. What about their son, Oliver? Oh, he was off at boarding school, which contradicts the Oliver Queen Chronicles, by the way, from season six. Right. Because those are... I don't know if you guys have seen those lately. Those are pretty rough. Those CGI origin story for Oliver Queen. I think like the first, no, actually it's all contradicted. And then if this contradicts it, and then Toxic in season eight completely contradicts it.
As long as the Chloe Chronicles are still canon.
Those are still canon. Thank God. So the Oliver Queen Chronicles was a variant.
No, they're not. Because I think Button Boy dies in the Chloe Chronicles comic tie-in.
Oh, you're right. That one of the I forgot about that. One of the Chloe Chronicles just turns into a comic book halfway through.
So this show just can't do anything. That's fine.
Yeah.
I forgot I had that comic. Oh my God.
Well, Craig, to be fair, Bug Boy died in Metamorphosis. Let's be real.
Okay. Yeah. And then like clearly clearly in Homecoming they meant for it to be Jeremy Creek, and he's like, oh yeah, Clark helped me. Clark didn't do shit for Greg Arkin.
Do you think it was supposed to be Jeremy Creek?
I feel like it was.
I like Bug Boy because he was Clark's friend before, and like there was a more personal connection.
The first villain.
Yeah, but he didn't even know Clark.
Fair, but either way, it didn't happen. So
as long as Lifehouse plays, I'm fine.
Like, Homecoming is a fantastic episode, but as we do as fans, there's always things we could tweak. So this is really establishing that, yeah, Lionel had the Queen's killed. I mean, we knew it, but now we're like seeing him like follow up, like, okay, good, we got to get that key. And then he's on the phone with the Teagues. He's like, yeah, well, now we just need Dr. Swan's key. So he waits 3 years to kill him and still doesn't get the key? Right? Like, that's the problem here. Like, that's the issue with that I have. Like, you're trying to wedge this in. I guess we can say, wait, Dr. Swan gave the necklace to his daughter.
3 years to kill him, right?
Oh, that's true. 4 years, maybe. So this is the pilot. 89. This is the same day as the pilot.
And right.
Oh, crap. I think it's seasons. We're talking like 15 years.
Yeah.
So I can only assume that he gave
the wheelchair is quick. He's wily, you know?
I can only assume he gave the necklace to Patty Swan, and then like she's off in Europe somewhere and they can't find her.
Sure.
I guess. Or Dr. Swan is this impenetrable planetarium that Lionel can't get to. I don't know. Why didn't he try to kill them when he saw him in season 3 when they quote unquote didn't meet for the first time? This is where it all falls apart, Craig.
Don't.
It's all falling apart. I blame you, the author of Smallville, The Fish Companion, season 7.
So, this is the reason they didn't get me back for season 8.
That's like,
you pointed all these things out.
But it is, I don't know, like, as frustrating as it is really cool to see this, I think. And it is Lionel always looking for a key. Look for that octagonal key.
Yep.
He's looking for that. He's like, you have the key. He's got the key, the Queen's key. And they're like, Mr. Luther, the helicopter's waiting. So he goes out there. And this moment is cool. But this is like a very cool moment between Lionel and Lex. He's like, son, are you ready to go on an adventure? And that's how their life starts with Smallville. So that's actually pretty cool. And this is the line. This is the line that I always point to when I joke about how far Smallville is from Metropolis. He's like, we're going to a friendly little town just outside the city.
Friendly little town.
We've gone from 3 hours away to basically a suburb of Metropolis.
It's just such a classic line now because of this podcast to me. Like that's all I could think of when I watched it. But in this scene too, like, how do you guys feel about the different kind of tones of Lionel that we have? Because we're now in like good guy Lionel land in present day. And I feel like that's carried over a little too much in these flashbacks where it's just like, he just had someone killed. And he's about to be like, you know, yelling at Lex in the helicopter of open your eyes, son. You know, like he's very friendly with Lex here. And it doesn't quite track for me.
I don't think we can come up with excuses for it.
I don't know. Like, it's him trying to be a good dad and compensate. I don't know. Like, I thought he ties his tie. Like, to me, that was cute.
It's
like,
Memoria. Lionel,
yeah. Okay. Put your troubles in that box. Like, I like. Lionel himself is a contradiction, period, right? So this, to me, this tracks.
Fair enough. Okay, good point. I should have thought, because there is that Memoria stuff where he's much more friendly and he is trying to be a good father, at least in parts, you know?
Yeah, and they get on the helicopter, and this takes us to that first shot we see of them in Smallville, 1989. Mm-hmm. So that's, to me, that's cool. That's cyclical storytelling, I mean, in its own way, and that's pretty cool. So then we get flashback to Lex in the present, and he references her line earlier. He's like, oh, you're right. Sometimes the things you're looking for have been right out in front of us all along. And he remembers where the necklace is. He's like, we don't have to go very far, right? Because he knows Lionel has it. And it's the last we see of Lex in this episode, because they obviously move the climax of the episode to the beginning of the next episode, which feels kind of odd that he just disappears. So they get Kara on the roof of the Daily Planet. And just, I guess, waiting for Brainiac to show up. And Clark doesn't want her to go with Brainiac because he's like, ah, it's a trap and all this stuff. And then Brainiac shows up and he really starts to twist the knife with Clark. He's like, have I mentioned that Lana's in extreme pain and she just can't show it? And I do like what he says. He messed up her central nervous system, quote, accidentally irreversible by humans, completely reversible by me. So I'm really picking up him as a villain this season.
Totally. And he's a little more arch. Like, this is a type of villain that is fun for me, where he's a real threat and he knows it and he's enjoying it.
There is a moment here where, like, okay, first of all, Kara agrees to go, and then she takes off first.
Right.
Which is odd, because she was supposed to go with Brainiac. I don't know where she's going, but that's fine. But it gives us this cool final look between, like, I really like the smug look that Brainiac gives Clark, and then he has an evil smile and he takes off. That's a nice moment. That should have come first. And then they both fly off together, because I don't know why she'd fly off first. Anyway, the point is they go out into space. And by the way, having watched Superman and Lois, or watching concurrently with the show, special effects have come a long way on television.
Oh my god, yes.
They fly out into space. It's, you know, it's whatever. And they keep flying. They fly past the Wayne satellite from Batman vs. Superman. And then they fly into this nebula or something. And then you see, like, a black hole open and, like, an energy explosion. And then that's the commercial break. And you're like, what?
In the original script, okay, Kara steps up to Brainiac, who greets her with a grin. Before Clark can stop them, Brainiac takes Kara's arm and they rocket into the night sky. Clark galvanizes all of his strength and leaps up after them. As the city drops away below him, Clark slows, unable to follow them, and drops. Tumbling toward Earth, Clark crashes into the Daily Planet globe.
Oh my god. I got chills hearing that. That would have been so cool. That would have paid off the lessons to me.
And that would have made the finale moment, too.
Yeah.
Well, the lessons we didn't see, Matt, but yes.
But the attempt. She pushed him.
The implied attempt of her to trade. That would have been cool. Like, come on, guys. Oh, give us that. And we would laugh about how the special effects look today, but still, we would at the time, we would have been like, this blue arm, I
see. I love this show. That gave me chills. Just your little reading of that gave me chills. Oh, that would have been so cool.
So that was the original end of Act 3.
Okay. As opposed to this black hole. because then they would show up again in the rainforest, right?
Yes, and what's weird is that scene took place in the script before Jimmy and Lois at Isis.
Huh.
Weird.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is this black hole them going back in time?
I think so.
Okay. So they're in the Speed Force now. Okay.
But as we saw in the DVD extra features, it was to the Amazon rainforest where they made a fortress.
Right, but that didn't happen. Yeah, okay.
But why does her bracelet start a fortress and not her crystal?
Look, everybody was so horny for this bracelet at one point. Like, I understand that it's got to be important.
But none of that happens. Clark just stands there like a big dumb alien and sees them fly into space in this black hole. We find out what happened to them in a few episodes. So we get Lionel of the Daily Planet, again, groveling, as you said, Matt, trying to get Chloe to listen to him. And this is, you know, John Glover, man, again, he's in a whole nother show. He is doing his own thing. He is bringing his A game. Every shot, every line. He's just he's telling Chloe's like not having it, right? And he's like, I've taken more responsibility for every atrocity I've committed in the past. She's like, in the past, what about this week? Who knows with you? And that's so true.
Yep,
like, with his character,
it's awesome. It's so cool to see, it's cool to know that he as an actor knew that he was at his end too, because like he is frayed. Like, we've never seen Lionel even close to where he is right now emotionally.
Yeah.
And that scene was also before the Daily Planet roof scene.
Really? Wow. Sure. Okay. Yeah. Well, that makes sense, because you want to space out, because after this, presumably you'd have the Lionel Lex scene.
Yeah. Right.
After Clark crashed into the globe, and then you have Lionel Lex. And I guess the last shot of the season would be just Lex, like, looking out the window at his. Oh, no, it'd be the Lionel. We'll get there. We're almost there. You know, Chloe's like, we're not stupid. You've cried wolf one too many times, right? And I'm like, okay, good. Finally, these characters are behaving like, you know, people would with this kind of guy. But he does, his explanation is like, she's like, why should I believe it? He's like, I've been changed, and I was chosen by Jor-El to be his vessel, to be his emissary, right? And I'm like, okay, I guess that's what they're saying changed him. But, I mean, he just happened to have that rock in his pocket when Clark made the fortress or whatever, right? That's the only reason.
And that was a while ago, and you were a dick last year. Yeah. But okay.
I don't know. That's the thing, right? Lionel's a very inconsistent character, but John Glover is so good that, like, you allow it. You know what
totally.
I mean?
Totally. It buys you so much to have him as the actor.
Yeah.
And he's interesting to have him be a wild card, you know? So. Mm-hmm. And he's getting so desperate. He's like, I've repented. You know, I've protect him. And so that's the way I found to repent for my sins. I've protected the traveler and all this stuff. Right. And he is really going for it. Right. But Chloe's done, you know, Chloe's done. And She tells him, you seriously need to come with a new line, and just kind of leaves him there. And I feel bad for him because no one will listen to him anymore. And he's like, something coming is so terrible. What's terrible? What is it, Lionel? That Lex can control the Traveler, which means taking away his powers. Ooh, haven't done that before.
Doomsday.
Well, is it Doomsday?
I don't know.
See, that's another Krypton Side Forums. Go check him out. Like, people were speculating a retcon in season 8 to re-retcon season 7 was Doomsday should have been the Traveler.
Yeah.
That would have been cool.
That would have been cool.
And then Lex comes. Lex can control the Traveler. So he comes and saves the day at the end of season 8, saving Clark's
that
life.
That would have been cool.
Boom. Mike
Trout. Yeah, Infinity Gauntlet to get Michael to come back.
Yes. So then we just leave Lionel here all, you know, he's there all desperate and haggard and stuff. But then we cut to, like, who knows how far in the future. Clark and Chloe are at this hospital visit plus one. Clark's like, tell me you got some leads on Brainiac. And he's like, she's like, I don't know. It's like they disappeared. Like, yeah, they went through a black hole back in time, Krypton or whatever, right?
Yeah, but so let's figure this out.
We have a whole episode dedicated to getting those pictures in that satellite. I can't wait. we get One More Day by Vast, which is a great song. It's an all-time Smallville. One more day.
This song, but it's so, like, music featured on tonight, Smallville.
It is so classic Smallville. It's so good, right? Vast, right? Vast has a couple of all-timers on Smallville. This one and then Don't Take Your Love Away in Bride.
Oh, okay.
Please don't take your love from me. Anyway, Vast and Smallville are a great fit. So, but Chloe's like, I'm going to wait here. I'm like, okay. So then Clark goes to see Lana sitting by this window. I liked how, and I don't know if this is intentional or not, but she's by the window by this angel statue, right? And it's to me, it's a reference to their first real interaction in the pilot, where they meet in the graveyard, just the angel statue with the wings. So it's like poetry, it rhymes. But then Tom's acting here is A+, I think. I think he does a really good job. Because he's really like, well, he's crying, he's upset. Like, I think he does a really solid job here. And then it's just Lana just being all catatonic, but then she does say, Kal-El, you're too late.
Okay, that wasn't the original script. That's one of the cliffhangers. Which is kind of weird, because if they didn't have Lana when they came back, then they would have been screwed.
Well, Lana did tell them it was too late.
For those that know, it would have been a Cordelia from Angel, where all of a sudden she wakes up from a coma when she comes back, you know?
Well, it's so strange. This is a strange scene because, okay, Chloe's like, I'm going to wait here. And then she doesn't. She just bursts in and sees them.
I noticed that.
Yeah. She bursts in like somebody just told her, oh my God, right? Someone's having I don't know why. She bursts in, sees Clark is upset, is crying. Why is she crying? Because she sees how much Clark loves Lana, not her. I don't know why she's crying.
It's her friend situation. Is up at this point. She's crying for everybody.
Lana
here.
Would
like,
be,
I don't,
if I'm Chloe, I'm like, thank God, I'm finally going to get my chance with Clark. It's all going to pay off. So,
until her cousin swoops in.
Clark closes her eyes, which is odd. I guess he's like, you're creeping me
that
out.
That creeped me out the most. Where it's just like, do you just want to look at her like you remember her? Was the only kind of like justification I could find for that.
It was strange, wasn't it?
Yeah,
so, but he closes her eyes. And
but it's like she's dead. Yeah, it's that type of thing.
Because Kristen Kirk isn't coming back. This is how they're wrapping up her character.
Right.
You laugh. Look how they wrapped up Lex. I mean,
oh, I'm with you.
This could have been it.
Hey.
You know, this is a pretty effective ending. For a season, though, I don't know, Craig. You're telling me this was going to be the last shot of the season?
Was the bracelet not going to be the last shot?
No, it's the last shot of Lana for the season.
Sure. But the bracelet was going to be the last shot of the episode initially?
The bracelet's later, but the Lex and Lana stuff is later too.
So you're telling me, okay, but then Lex goes to Zurich too, right? In the original script?
Lex goes to Zurich.
So he kills Lionel. He takes the key.
He kills Lionel. He goes to Zurich.
He opens the box. What's in the box?
He opens the box. There's a parchment envelope, the same one in the season 7 flashback. It lists it out, turns it over, finding a red wax Veritas seal. He cracks the wax open, breaking the seal inside the map. On a parchment page is a latitude and longitude marking inscribed over a single point in the middle of the illustration. And that tells him where to go to the fortress.
How would that know where the fortress was?
How the hell?
The fortress was formed in season 4 in 2005.
God damn it.
Oh, good
This point. Is what I'm saying.
But hey, to be fair though, the crystals guided Clark to where that would be and chosen the place. Here's if you buy the actually Veritas journals, I can be like, well, I guess they knew where the crystals were going to grow the thing, right?
So the last two scenes of the actual episode are the fortress thing with Karis Bracelet creating a new fortress, and then the last shot is exterior of the Arctic day. Gliding over vast landscapes of pure white, camera finds a sleek black snowmobile cresting a downy drift. Reveal Lex in a hooded parka cutting through wind-whipped powder.
North of his test mocker.
I was just going to say, I like the Superman 2 of this. Keep going,
sir. He closes the humming vehicle as his eyes widen in amazement. There before him is the Fortress of Solitude and all of its glistening, icy magnificence. And then the next shot, next scene is Lex's face full of wonderment as he walks a curious step forward to reveal Lex standing triumphantly in the center of the crystal cavern. As the camera pulls further back up the icy columns, retreating further toward the top of the crystalline palace, off the ominous intruder in Clark's sacred sanctuary. ... Cut to black. End of episode.
Okay. Would it have said to be continued? Is that something they put in scripts?
It usually did, but it did not in this case.
Oh, much like Arctic did not.
Mm. Yeah.
That, see, to me, everything you just told us, I wanted that episode more than this episode. You know what I mean?
I really wish totally. They had on like a DVD or Blu-ray.
Because they filmed it. Clearly, we have the shots of Lex.
Yes, so, on the trip.
Also, with that version of it, with it him not really knowing that it's Clark specifically.
Oh, you could still get
we
around
We don't
it.
Have to do all the bullshit in the finale. Yeah.
That's so... I didn't consider that, Matt. You could still get around it conceivably.
That's huge, story-wise. Oh, man.
Tell me everything, starting with the crystals.
Yeah.
So...
And he could still disappear, and we could all be like, "Does he know?" You know, like in that type of thing. But
well, Lex went up north. We never saw him, right?
For him
you could say
know.
He got sucked into the Phantom Zone or something, right? Sure, like Jor-El froze him. There's so many better ways to do that than Oh man. Now, is it bad that I wish the writer's strike continued? I know we were all happy that Smallville got 20 episodes.
We could have gotten two Dr. Horribles. We could have gotten a better season finale. Yeah,
we would have been spared that episode where Lex was told he was on the no-fly list and then showed up on a plane in the very next scene.
Oh, but Robert Picardo wouldn't have gotten a job, and that's not okay.
And we would have had Jimmy the Spy.
Craig and I will talk about this, because you'll be back for Arctic, Craig. We'll talk about this, right? But Apocalypse is a great episode, as is Descent. So I don't know if I would trade those to have this better finale. It's Clark trying to fly and crashing, Lex finding the fortress. Like, this stuff is good. This stuff is good. I don't know.
It means a lot to me as a fan, though, because I was watching this going today. Like, how much did they cut out? Because this is kind of dull if it was going to be the season finale. But it would have been a good season finale.
It would have been a better season finale in Arctic.
Yes.
Am I right?
Yes. But you're right. We're like
Arctic at the time.
How many fan videos wouldn't exist without Apocalypse and Descent? You know,
I am the president of the United States.
Right.
We're not stupid. You preyed on Clark's inherent need to find good in all people and his constant willingness for forgiveness. But now you have cried wolf one too many times.
Miss Sullivan, please, I'm begging you to listen. Clark won't talk to me. He's turned away from Jor-El, and now he is vulnerable. He is in terrible danger.
If he's in any danger, it's only from you.
I'm repentant!
That's right, you're an intensely spiritual man. You amassed all the power a human could until you found out about Clark. Befriending him is the closest thing you'll ever get to seeing God.
Protecting him. It's the only way I found to pay for my sins. And isn't that what we all want? To repent and be forgiven. But none of that matters. Because what's coming is so terrible.
Another false warning.
No!
You seriously need to come up with a new lie.
No!
Veritas got an 8.6 out of 10 on IMDb, and Neil Bailey from the Superman homepage gave it a 5 out of 5.
What?
He had been giving so many ones this season. He gave Traveler 4 out of 5. He was really picking up this Veritas storyline, let me tell you. I'm going to read a small excerpt from his review to give us some context. Quote, people finally are treating Lionel logically. Chloe rips into him, blasts him for being evil so many times and ignores his warnings, just like Clark did. This is logical. This is how it should have been ever since he blew Chloe up. The screwy thing is that because this show has established that these people will buy his lies repeatedly, it comes off as out of character. But you know what? I don't care. Better out of character and logical, or steering toward the logical, than in character and stupid. And finally, ending with Lana and Clark together, Clark finally displays his emotion over his failure to protect Lana. Love the Brainiac rub-in. You're too late, Kal-El. That stings like a bitch, and it should. Chloe being the emotional one, crying to see the man she's obviously loved in pain. It's great ending and a great show. I am blown away by the potential here, and I hope they keep it coming because I'm eager to see the next one now. 5 out of 5.
Oh, I can't wait to see where he goes for the rest
of
the season.
Man, I'm afraid to see what he does for the rest of the season. But, you know, on the letter grade scale, as we do here, Matt, let's start with you. What would you give Veritas?
I almost want to grade on a curve because of the writer's strike of it all. But, like, I don't know. There wasn't too much here, so like a B.
Fair. What about you, Craig?
I was thinking the same about a B, but if they had done the original script, probably would have gotten an A.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, just regardless of what they did after that, just to knowing that they went where they went, like, you can't go back from a lot of that stuff. I mean, Smallville would.
They'd figure it out.
The adrenaline.
They'd come up with that memory goo even earlier, but that's fine.
All cognitive memory. But I'm going to settle on... I was struggling with this, too. I think I'm going to settle on a B-, especially since both of you gave it a B's. I feel better giving a B-.
That feels like such a hit, though. Like, I didn't have the nerve to give him a B-.
I just...
Explain yourself.
Like, it was just... boring. What was accomplished here? I don't know, like, some things obviously, but Lex is like 2 steps forward, 1 step back. I really like, it's really on the strength of the Lionel stuff. The flashbacks out of continuity context, those are a lot of fun. Like, oh cool, look, it's the queens and the, you know, baby kids and the, you know, it's the newspaper from the pilot and they're going off in that helicopter, right? So that's cool. So B- for me. Is that good enough answer for you, man?
I'll take it. Thank you, Zach. Thank you for explaining yourself.
So a B from Matt, a B from Craig, and a B- from me. I'll say this, you know, I gave Traveler a B because it was like at least exciting. Season 7 is lots of ups and downs. I think I might like season 7 more than season 6 though. At this point, is that a hot take? I don't know. Like, as complicated as it's been, there's some things I really didn't like, but there's some things I really do like. Like all the Lex stuff and Lionel stuff, retcons aside, I really like that stuff.
I agree with you.
So we'll see when we reach the end. What I really think, but I am, much like season 4, I'm liking season 7 more than I remembered. But I still hate a lot of the same things I hated when I ranked it last. But real quick, let's go through the tally board. We have a +1 for Blue Shirt, Red Jacket. That brings us to 72. We have a +1 for Chloe's Unseen Connections. That brings us to 29. We have a +1 for Episode Title. Set an episode. That brings us to 61. We have a +1 for Hospital Visit. That brings us to 114. Yeah, let's stop and laugh.
Every time. I'm sorry.
We have a +1 for Lois's Costume Closet. That brings us to 6. So this is the final one to ask you. Like, mind control count, under the influence, or possession? One of these three has to apply to Lana. What should it be? I'd say mind control.
I think so, too.
Okay. Because he's not like, you know, Chloe will be possessed by Brainiac. He's not doing that to Lana.
It's not that.
And she's not really under an influence. She's literally being controlled, like puppeteered.
And it's very, like, let's think of it more comic booky. It's very Mad Hatter, Jervis Tetch type thing. So, like, in that world, I'm going to go with mind control.
Mind control it is. So that brings us to 23 so far. Bechdel test fail.
Yeah, totally.
Yes.
Sorry, that's all I had. Sorry.
That's all he's got. So Bechdel test fail, and that's going to do it for Veritas. Truth, what is truth, Veritas? So I don't know, Craig, like, thank you for your insight on the original script. I think I definitely would have rather seen that episode, but we will never know.
Yeah, very enlightening. But, you know, again, we'll complain about the show that we get forever, but we're still happy that we got it, right?
That's true. I mean, like, it's kind of this, talking about, you want the 5 extra episodes. It's like, yeah, did Smallville run too long? Well, I guess, yeah, technically it would have been better if they, like, it's half as long, but, like, I'm glad we have 10 seasons, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, much like Tom Welling. And I was like, sure, keep renewing my contract.
How many zeros? Sure.
In all seriousness, though, I did like what he said. I mean, I in some of these interviews, he's like, look, if I quit, then like everybody loses their job because there's no show anymore. So, you know, I'm sure
he was very handsomely paid, but I always admired that kind of that take for man.
Got that EP credit and then got to produce Hellcats. Always hold on to Hellcats. Coming, what? That's the next project after Always.
We'll do that on April Fool's Day, right, Zach?
That's a perfect guess for April Fool's Day. We're all going to come back and talk about Hellcats.
And that year in the Patreon, we're going to do Always Hold On to Black Sash, right? Because that was the other
Black. Was that what came on the same night?
Oh, never mind. Nobody remembers.
That was too deep a cut for us. I don't even know.
I remember Black Sash.
Can we do the Tarzan show while we're at it, Matt?
It was the replacement for Tarzan, I think. Or maybe Birds of Prey. It doesn't matter. Sash. Cut all this out. It doesn't matter.
No, it was it was at least in development at the same time.
Was that a pirate show?
It might have. No, it was a white people learn karate show.
What?
Yeah.
Well, that's been a lot of fun, everybody. Matt, where can people find you out there online?
Oh, please find me in 1990s Metropolis on Lois and Clark, the new podcast of Superman, everybody, where these two gentlemen haunt my podcast every once in a while, too. And on the Patreon, of course.
That's right. We're running through the streets of Central City over there on the Patreon and always on to the Flash. So, Craig, what about you, man? Tell us about how Krypton Site still exists.
Well, you just beat me to it. Krypton Site still exists. I'm covering, of course, Superman and Lois there, which is our new super show. A couple months ago, I did a bunch of Smallville 20th anniversary interviews that I posted on the site. I still have one more coming, even though it's going to be a little late. That was a lot of fun to just get to talk, reconnect with a few people. I got to talk to Laurie Vandervoort, Michael Rosenbaum, Alan Miles. Got some of my frequently asked questions or long-standing questions answered. So that was a lot of fun. So Krypton Site, K-Site TV, you can find me all kinds of places.
Absolutely, man. Everybody go check that out, especially your Superman and Lois coverage. It's so great to have a Superman show on the air again and a great Superman show on the air again. It's such a great feeling. And yeah, and again, if anyone hasn't checked out, you know, Craig's interviews with like Alan Miles and Annette O'Toole as well and all that, so everybody go check it out. I loved you talking to them, although it was brief, but they talked about their plan for the series finale. It would have been so much better.
Oh, that was so cool. Just to blow you up a little bit more, too, it is fun to have a Superman show on the air and to be hearing about it at the same place. Like, there's a great nostalgic thrill that goes with all this stuff. So, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, as for me, more on Zach on Twitter, MOREUNZCH. Host a couple of podcasts on the United Federation of Podcasts. You can find us on Twitter at UFP Earth with Franchise Fatigue and Sasquatch. And as for the podcast here, always hold on to Smallville on Facebook, always Smallville with 1S on Twitter. And you can send us an email at alwaysmallville@gmail.com. Once again, with 1S. That's going to do it for us this week. Now, we are taking a hiatus from Smallville because this was going to be the season 7 finale. I am taking advantage of that and taking a hiatus to talk about Superman and Lois on Always On Superman and Lois. We were back for season 2. Me and Sarah are back. She agreed to watch another season with me.
How did you convince her?
I'll tell you what, the show being great has helped us a lot. That's continuing to do season 2. So thank you for being good, Superman and Lois. So we'll be back for that. Our main focus now for the next stretch is going to be Superman and Lois. So definitely everybody check that out. I really do think if you love Smallville, you're going to enjoy Superman and Lois. I really do think so.
I can't wait for that show to be back. Always hold on to Superman and Lois. I can't wait to hear Sarah again.
Yeah, it's a whole different vibe, right?
Yeah, it's totally. But it's also, it's the same fix for me. It's very fun.
So until then, always hold on to Smallville. I was wrong. Now I'll never see your face anymore. Oh my love, I'd give anything for one more day with you. I was wrong. Now I'll never see your face anymore. Oh my love, I'd do anything for one more day with you.
I'd do anything for one day. I'd give anything for one more day with you.
Always Home to Smallville is brought to you by listeners like you. Chris Fuchs, Cavante Chillis, Dallas Hernandez, Darren Kirst, Joey Deanberg, JJ Hodges, DJ Duenna, Nathan Rothatcher, Coy Moore, Leanne Pritchett, Mark Kids Foppin, Patricia Carrillo, Nathan McKenzie, Jason Skipper, Steve Rogers, Joe McIndoe, Atif Sheik, Molly Ficarella, John Curcio, Mike Franz, Dylan D'Antonio, Thomas Navin, Andrew Parker, James Lee, Jonathan England, Adam Sullins, Joe Michael, Zachary Burkhalter, Alex Ramsey, Jason Davis, Patrick Bravo, Jacob Stevenart, Deanna Bias, Nick Ryan MacDoza, Eddie Bissell, Nicholas Fansler, Catherine Caldwell, Will Hunt, Clunk Kent, Matt B., Mariana Sachi, Tom Gerke, Nicholas Coso, Erica Flynn, Jared Gibbs, Anthony Anderson, Jasmine McGelly, Keith Falls, Lauren D., James Hart, and Melissa Brown. Thank you so much to all these patrons, and you too can become a patron by going to patreon.com/alwaysmallville with one S. Hope to see you there.